Your cadence should be what your promise is going to be. If you can comfortably deliver 2 a month, and most people can, even if they're just starting, do 2 a month. So whatever your cadence is, that's your promise to your listener.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
What's up, podcaster? It's your host, Adam Adams. And today I'm with Tom Fox. And we are talking about his podcast, what he's learned, what he's done. And here's the big thing. If you are new at podcasting, I think you can learn a thing or two from Tom because he's monetizing his show in about 5 different ways. And he's been doing this since 2012. So he's been doing it for a while. He knows what he's doing. And he's been able to monetize his podcast through a podcast network and some other ways as well. So if that's what you're looking for, to make money through your podcast, I think you're going to get a few tips and tricks. And some of them are definitely things that you had not heard of before. You had not maybe even considered doing them. And so I'm stoked. You can get Tom's bio by scrolling down into the show notes, and the whole bio is right there. Also, the link to FCPA Compliance Report, that's a podcast. That's his show. One of his shows. That link is also down in the show notes. His website and or any social media that he wanted you to have, all down in the show notes. So scroll down, connect with him, and let's start talking about how you can monetize in new, different ways. Hey, Tom, back in 2012, you launched a podcast. Prior to doing your podcast, which you're making money through right now, what was your focus? What were you focused on?
I am a lawyer, and I practiced in the regulatory and compliance space. I went out on my own in 2010, and so I was laid up due to a bad accident and literally never left my house except to go to physical therapy. So at that point in my life, I knew nothing about social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. And I just started posting on that. And I literally built a worldwide consulting practice from my house before we called it work from home, while laid up with a double fractured left leg through social media. I started blogging. As a lawyer, I'd always written a lot. So I started blogging, once again, as a marketing outreach. And that's what led me to podcasting. It was just a natural extension of blogging.
That's pretty cool. When you launched your podcast, what were you thinking would happen with the podcast? What were you expecting? And this is a two-part question. So you're about to launch a podcast, and I'm thinking, what were your expectations? And what things failed the expectations and which exceeded the expectations?
Well, I'm not sure I had any expectations back in 2012, one exception, which was the following. I had a teenage daughter who thought her dad was decidedly uncool. And I said, honey, if your dad had a podcast on iTunes, would that be cool? And she said, oh yeah, that'd be cool, Dad. So I had my daughter's coolness for about 30 days. So I met that expectation.
It wore off.
It wore off. She was a teenager. But in terms of the podcasting, I'm not sure I had any expectations back then. I had seen, obviously, other people do podcasting. I thought it would be great to be thought of as a talking head in compliance. And so, although I cringe looking at them now, some of those early podcasts were just me being a talking head. And I evolved into interviews and really have stuck with that format since then.
And with the podcast, how have you gotten your name out? And by the way, I don't know if I said this to the listener, but he's done about 1,500 episodes just on FCPA. That link is down in the show notes, Compliance Report. So about 1,500 episodes just on there. He edits and produces podcasts as well. Is that right, Tom?
Yes, I do.
And your podcast network, you have like 60 people that are paying to be part of that network?
Actually, no, it's about 60 shows.
60 shows, not 60
50 people. Of which are mine and 10 are other.
Okay. Okay, so, cool. So you personally have 50 podcasts?
6 to 8 a day.
Incredible. How do you do that? Are you still working as an attorney? And if so, because what I'm thinking through right now for the listener is our time is worth something. Some of us, our time is worth $20 an hour. Some of us, it's $200 an hour. It might be $2,000 an hour or whatever. And at hosting and editing podcasts can take time and energy. And I'm curious if you feel Like by being an attorney, you do really well when you work for people and represent them and help them with compliance. And do you feel like it's still valuable to you to have a podcast or several podcasts where you're recording, I think you said about 8 episodes a day?
So when I started, it was certainly a marketing outreach, and I definitely think it helped my legal / consulting practice. What happened was I founded the network in 2017. In 2019, I decided it was time to get serious around the podcast. So quit practicing law and dedicated myself full time to podcasting, bought all the cool toys, built this huge network out. And at the end of the year, I'd made about $10,000. Well, that was an interesting experiment. Time to go back to practicing law. So I did that in Q1 of 2012, and the country shut down around March 15th. And all the legal work dried up. It was going to happen.
Let me interrupt you just real fast, because I heard you talk about 2012 and then you jumped to the pandemic of 2020. Did you mean to say 2020 just then? Okay. Just making sure.
So I founded the network in 2017, and 2019 is when I committed to it full time and found out it wasn't going to work full time. So moving back to hobby status, and we get to the pandemic. And what happened to me was literally May 15 of 2020, every product provider in the compliance space, it's a very small space, contacted me and said, with one question, how long to get access to your network? Because even by then, I had the largest social media presence in compliance, because almost all marketing compliance is done in person, trade shows, breakfast roundtables, speeches, you name it. But it was all in person.
Why has it been traditionally in person, and is online a better way to do it?
I don't know why it was always done in person, except that that was how it was done when I started in 2010, and it continued up to the pandemic. Obviously, the pandemic changed it.
Yeah.
But when I started getting those emails and calls, my answer was 24 hours to get you on my network because of the work I'd done in 2019. I had this huge infrastructure, and it was just a drop and drag or a plug and play. So I was able to put people on my network, and I went from $5,000 a month in income to $35,000 a month in income in 1 month.
And that's so, just from hosting the network?
Well, it was from sponsorships. It was from hosting. It was from bringing people on from other companies. It was my 5-part podcast series, variety of different uses of the podcast, but it all was around the distribution network I had created through the podcast network.
Okay. Let's spend some time talking about these 5 different ways that you've found to monetize your show. But one at a time, I'll just brief them to the listener so that they can kind of get a head start on it. One is by hosting a podcast network. Basically, you have a whole bunch of different podcasters, part of your network, and Tom sells banners. He sells ads in that area so that people that want to be in front of that network, they can put money there. Number two, host red ads. So Tom does host red ads where somebody wants to advertise on his show, one of his shows, and he'll read the ad and make some money by helping them get more exposure. The third way is appearance fees, which means he charges guests to be on his show. The fourth way is branded host shows. So basically he becomes the host and he interviews other attorneys where they can shine in front of their people. So he does the work so that they don't really have to be the podcaster. And he also will edit that and everything. Number 5 is this 5-part series that he'll do for companies. So we'll jump into these. We'll do the first 3 and then we'll take a quick break and then we'll do number 4 and number 5. So that's what to expect. Tom, so let's talk about if my listener today is thinking about running a podcast network, what would be their considerations? How would they get started? How would they monetize it? And what's the hard part and the easy part about it?
So the way I think about it is space, territory, location, whatever word you choose. So start with your website. What are the locations on your website that would lend themselves to an advertiser, to a sponsor? And for me, the number one is the very top, the banner. So you'll see the name of my compliance podcast network across the top of the website. But immediately below that, you see 2 banners. One is Podtastic Friends, which is a nonprofit I support and I don't charge for. But below that is Kona AI, and they're my lead sponsor for the network. So because that territory is the most valuable. I would like to tell you I thought of this, but of course, I don't even think my own material. The oldest blogger in the compliance space developed all of this with the banner at the top, and then he has ads on each side. I haven't gone that far. But I think the banner ad is the primest or most prime territory. So that's on the website. Now we move to the podcast itself. Where is the prime territory in the podcast? You've announced that we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor here in a few moments. So obviously a mid-roll is a key element. That's prime territory because by now you're invested in the podcast and you probably are going to want to listen to the ad. I certainly do if I was listening to this podcast, but you have a pre-roll ad and a post-roll ad, and the values of those go up and down. So that's also territory. It's not limited there because I have a daily newsletter that I send out that lists all of my podcasts. Once again, that newsletter means location, territory, space, or advertisements. I can do it at the top, advertising a webinar, event, or other, or I can do it at the bottom. Turns out on a newsletter, you actually get more engagement by putting things at the bottom. Can't explain why, but that's what the numbers tell us. So everything you do has a location that lends itself to a sponsorship, to an ad, to a something that you can monetize going forward.
Awesome. So do you also make money through charging those other hosts to be part of the network, or is it free to them?
No, I do charge a small fee for bringing, I call them non-Tom Fox podcasts. So I have two categories of podcasts. Those I host or produce, those are called Tom Fox podcasts. And then the rest are called non-Tom Fox podcasts. So I charge them a monthly fee to be on my network. And then it can increase by the number of social media assets I might create for their podcast to help publicize them.
Okay, cool. Let's move on to the second way that you've made money through your podcast. Now, you mentioned mid-roll ads for the podcast as well, but let's just talk about how you do host read ads. You said you typically do three-month contracts. This was in the green room, so the listener probably didn't hear that. But you typically do a three-month contract, but at least one of your people has been with you for a year or more. Can we go into that?
Sure. So one of the podcasts called Data Driven Compliance is sponsored by Kona AI, a data analytics product provider in the compliance space. So I reached an agreement with them for them to sponsor that podcast for the entire year, which they have done. And they were so pleased with that, they actually bought a banner ad on the website. So that's why they are a sponsor of the website as well. They found that was just, I literally have 500,000 touch points a month in terms of social media and my podcast downloads. So I have a distribution channel for them that's as broad and as wide as they can possibly get through my network. And that, I guess that was probably the biggest insight, was when I realized I don't have a podcast something, I have a distribution network. And if you have a distribution network, you can distribute whatever you want through it.
Cool. 500,000 touch points a month. What does that mean?
That means downloads, hits, impressions, social media, engagement on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, newsletters, emails, my podcast network site itself, the Compliance Podcast Network, my hosting platform, Megaphone, and then the 15 different channels that I distribute, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google, etc.
Cool. And how do you charge for all of this? Like you mentioned that you have Kona, who's doing the banner ad, and they're sponsoring one of the podcasts in your network, the other compliance podcast. How do you decide to charge? Is it based on your listenership? Is it based on the 500,000? How do you charge? And like, how can we translate that to our listener who's a podcaster and wants to monetize with host read ads?
So I didn't really use any metrics to come up with a number I charged. I just went as high as the market would bear. So I kept increasing it until people said no.
Yeah. I'm going to quote you on that. Didn't use metrics, just went as high as the market could bear. I'm writing this down. I love it. Just went as high. So you kept raising it. And what would you say for the listener, if they're considering doing this, what might be a place that they should start? Should they start small and then just slowly up increase, or should they start high? And if it doesn't get any takes, then drop it a little bit, or What's kind of the thought process if we want to monetize like this?
I think both are equally valid. Mine was I just started lower because back in 2017, and there were no rules. There was no Bible I could go to look up how to do this. And so I just thought it up and did it. And I realized that, or I guess my wife said, increase your price. Just keep increasing it till somebody says no. And so that's what I did. I started at $1,000 and went up $500 increments.
Where did you stop?
$2,500 a month.
And how many sponsors do you try to have at a time?
Well, it's one sponsor per show. So you get your own show. And since I post 6 to 8 a day, however many I can get for those 6 or 8.
So when you say, just to clarify here, you've got 50-ish podcasts. You do 6 to 8 different shows each day. And so does that mean that about 5 days a week times the 8-ish fits in somehow to your 50? Is that sounding right? Or could you correct me if I'm not?
I think you've got it right.
Okay.
But I post on a variety of cadences. So for instance, I have 2 daily shows. I have 5 weekly shows. I have 15 biweekly.
Okay.
Or bi-monthly. I have a couple that are monthly. I have a couple that are quarterly. So it's a variety of cadences.
Okay. Since you have the experience with this gambit of episodes per day, 1 a day, episodes per week, 1 a week, some are every other week, and some might be once a month or even once a quarter. For the listener, let's just say that our listener today is brand new. They either have no podcast and about to start, they want to start, or that listener has one show and they're considering maybe doing more shows. What cadence do you feel is going to be the most effective from your experience over the last, say, 11 years, 12
years? I would have to answer it in a different direction. And that is, I heard the author James Patterson once say this, and it has impacted my thinking on this word forever. When someone said, "What is your brand?" It was a video training class I took, and he put out his hand as if you and I were going to shake hands. And he said, "This is your brand, your handshake. It's your word. And your brand is you're going to deliver what you say you're going to deliver." Now, he's a thriller author, and he said, "I'm a thriller author. My audience expects that of me. I can write a romance, but I have to tell people this is different. This is not a James Patterson thriller. This is a romance. Expect that." And so I took that in the podcast world to mean my brand is what I promise my listener. So if I promise them 1 a week, I have to deliver that because they're expecting that. Now, I can promise 2 a week, or excuse me, a daily. I can promise 2 a month. Whatever that cadence is, that's my promise to my listenership. And so my answer would be your cadence should be what your promise is going to be. If you can comfortably deliver 2 a month, and most people can, even if they're just starting, do 2 a month. You can move from 2 a month to 4 a month, from a bi-monthly to a weekly, easily. However, it's difficult to move from 4 times a month to 2 times a month. People think you're not very serious about it. So whatever your cadence is, that's your promise to your listener. And so you've mentioned the FCPA compliance report several times. That's my oldest podcast. It's my signature podcast. And my promise is midnight Monday every week, come hell or high water. Sorry, I hope I can cuss on this.
Of course.
I'm a PG podcast, so I should have said that. I'm going to deliver an episode. Maybe I'm up late or up early doing it, but that's my promise to my audience. And it's my responsibility to have the discipline to deliver that.
I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Hell or High Water, you start out with a promise. James Patterson has a thriller, and this one was a romance. But your brand is what you promise the listener. And you promise the listener, I'm going to do a certain amount. And you mentioned that it's better to grow than to shrink. It's better to start with 2 and go to 4 than to start with 4 and go to 2. And I'm looking into everything that you have going on with all these different podcast episodes and how many you record and how many you publish. For me personally, when I'm coaching a client to do a podcast, I will ask them to record more than they produce, because if they ever get behind the eight ball, it can be very challenging to press forward. If you're ahead of the game, it can be very easy to press forward. with your cadence, putting out 50-ish episodes, 40-ish episodes a month, let's say, a week, I'm not sure, but it's a lot. With when you add all of them, how do you make sure that you do produce an episode hell or high water? In what way do you ensure that you're not going to fail your listener?
Well, for the longest time, I had all of those answers up in my head. And so I broke it down by days. So I know the 6 podcasts that go up on Monday, and Sunday I double check to make sure, and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Hopefully I'm a little more sophisticated now because I have an assistant who keeps a calendar of all of those. And she tells me, Tom, the email today was, you have not posted 3 podcasts that go up on Tuesday. Please get them up. So now I have someone behind me sort of hitting me in the back of the head. But largely I know what goes up. That's how I do it.
So do you try to get, when I was saying before that I coach clients to go try to stay ahead of the game, like for example, I asked my team this morning, I said, how many interview episodes do we have? And they counted it up and it was 42. And so I was like, okay, so if we're doing 2 a week, that's 20 weeks. If we're doing 1 a week, that's 40 weeks. If we're doing 4 a week, that is 10 weeks of content. And that helps me to be able to go on vacation, get sick with COVID and not be able to talk. I actually got my appendix taken out and it took me out for a little while because I was on pain medicine and you can't think straight when you're on that. And the goal for me is always to be so far ahead that I could get sick and go on vacation and all of that stuff all at the same time. For you, do you have that ability or is it today's Monday? You need something for Tuesday.
So it's a little bit in between.
Okay.
I'm a little bit ahead on some podcasts, but I do a daily news show. So I can't do that until the day before because it's current events.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to be gone next week, I know I have to have everything in place except the daily news the week before. And then I just do the daily news wherever I am with a laptop and a portable Shure mic. Not optimum quality, but for the purpose, my listeners seem to accept that because I put it out daily.
I like that. Cool. Let's go to 3, the appearance fees. How do you do that? I think I would get scared. So if I'm going to be scared to ask for somebody to pay me, like I did not ask you to pay me to jump on the show today. And don't ask anyone. Although I have paid $3,500 to get on someone else's podcast once, one time
that,
only.
Be JDL?
Yeah, John Lee Dumas. Yeah. So I did pay to get on his podcast and I wasn't prepared enough, by the way. This is a side tangent real quick. I tried everything possible to not sell myself. And that's not actually what he's looking for. He actually wants you to sell yourself. So I wasn't aware. And I wouldn't say I wasted $3,500. I would say somehow I made it back. But the next time I do something like that, I'm going to be a little bit more prepared. Just for you personally, how do you do that? How would you teach another podcaster to get the confidence to say, you want on my show? You're going to pay.
I'm going to answer that in a moment, but I first have to address your John Lee Dumas experience. And I would say that was as valuable a learning experience to you as I've heard you talk about so far in this podcast, because you felt like you were unprepared. And I suspect you're never going to feel like that again, as you paid $3,500 to be what you thought was unprepared. But 2, in the bigger issue that you started with, which is fear. We all had fear, and the fear you articulated for asking for an appearance fee is exactly what I had. And once again, God bless her, my wife, Tom, you need to ask for an appearance fee, Tom. And the reason I did was because I get 10 to 15 pitches a day from PR people. And just because everybody knows in this space, I'm the guy. And so I was getting all these, and I feel like if someone emails me with a pitch, I need to investigate, review, and then respond. And I was just getting overwhelmed doing that. And I finally thought, well, I'll go to a $250 appearance fee, and that will cut out a lot of the riffraff. And so September 1 of this year, 2023, I just started it. I charged $250 for an appearance fee. And I will say my inbox is not nearly as full with PR pitches as it used to be. And some of the big podcast guesting companies that put forward guests, they won't pay for that, but it's an extra $1,000 a week or $1,000 a month, and that defrays cost. And no one seems to be offended by the amount of $250. I looked at doing exactly what you did, but I decided not to spend the money with John Lee Dumas. And I think if you got to get over your fear, you just have to get over it. No one is offended in the business world if you ask for a business fee. They may say no. I've only gotten one kind of even close to an ugly response. I'm like, okay, I won't do business with you guys. It's that simple. I'm a lawyer. I can play the lawyer hat. And you just have to get over that fear. And the people who have asked me for fees, it generally comes with an email explanation, either in the sign-up form or I use Podmatch a lot. And in Podmatch, you occasionally get people who want fees and they'll say that right up front. And I'm not offended that they ask for it. And typically I'll pay for it if they ask for it. But I don't think you're going to offend anyone. And if you handle it as a professional, in a professional manner, this is a fee I have to help defray my cost because I have cost to produce this podcast and put it out through my network. And you're going to get something back. And that something back is access to my listenership and my distribution platform. So I think if you handle it professionally, you're not going to offend anyone. But the fear you articulated, believe me, I know exactly what you're saying. And to the listener hearing this, you may have the same thing. Well, nobody would ever pay me for that. Well, you've probably never tried. And you might get turned down 10 times, but if you get 100, 250, 500, whatever you decide your fee is, that's additional revenue that you can reinvest in your overall podcast experience for your customer.
I like it. So I've got a 3-4-part question for you real quick. Do you try to get on other people's shows?
Yes.
Part 2, how many are you looking to be on per week or per month?
As many as possible.
Up to what threshold would you say?
Not hit it, so I've not had to consider what that threshold might be.
Okay, cool. Why do you want to get on other people's shows? What's the benefit to you?
The benefit is that hopefully they will then discover my network and then subscribe or drive the numbers up on my network, number one. Number two, to try to get my message out, similar to what we're talking about. And I know this is probably going to sound inane, but literally till about 6 months ago, I didn't think I had anything to say about podcasting. And I didn't think I had anything worthwhile to help anybody with. And Chris Krematos and some other people whose opinion I value greatly convinced me that I did. And I needed to start talking about these monetization strategies and most particularly the successes that I've had and the failures and missteps that I've made along the way to really help other podcasters as well.
I think you already answered my 4th part of this question. I think you already answered it, but I'm going to double check. Would you pay to get on somebody else's show?
Absolutely.
Because I think you said you had done it if they ask, right? Is there a threshold for you? Like if you're going to get on somebody's podcast, does it have to be a certain size if you're going to pay? Or does it have to be in a certain genre if you're going to pay? Or how does it look for you to decide whether to pay? Or is it maybe the amount? I'll pay up to 50, I'll pay up to 700 or whatever it is.
It's on a case-by-case basis, but number one, I will pay to be on anybody's podcast. They don't have to be in any genre. I seriously thought about paying and applying for John Lee Dumas just because I actually have interviewed him for a podcast series and role and world not in podcasting. He was a ROTC cadet on 9/11, and that night he knew he was going to war. And so I've interviewed him about his military experience for a podcast series about 20-year retrospective on 9/11. I have great admiration for him. He's been incredibly open to the compliance, to the podcasting community. He's as transparent as anyone I know. So for all of kind of those reasons beyond simply his network, I thought about doing that. I ended up not. So I don't know if there's a top-end threshold. If Joe Rogan called me and said, Tom, for $5,000, you can be on my podcast. Yeah, I'd think about it.
Oh, yeah. I think I would. Because there's like a million people that would check it out.
Yeah.
I think $5,000 is worth it.
Yeah.
So I'm not afraid to pay. For me personally, I would want to look to see how big the audience is. Like what kind of traction do they get off of it? Because if they're not getting any traction, then I might not even want to do it for free. If they're getting a lot of traction, then I'd probably be really willing, like we were talking about with Joe Rogan, to pay $5,000 just for one podcast. I wouldn't mind that at all because he's got so many people.
You bring up a very important point, Adam, which is if you propose a fee, so I get pitch, I say, I think that'd be a great guest. I have a fee, it's $250. Typically, the next email is, thank you for your email, Tom. Can you please tell us the numbers of your podcast? And that's okay. An absolutely fair inquiry. If you're going to charge someone for something, You should be able to explain to them what they're getting back. And so what I give them is the numbers. And I've worked very hard to develop auditable, transparent numbers for my podcast network. And I provide them with that. Happy to share with anyone that, and also the numbers of the individual podcast, because I think that's a fair question. Because once again, this is a business decision. Is it worth their investment, time and money, to come on my podcast and record? And so I think it's absolutely fair to not only ask that question, to also be asked that question and answer it.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, let's jump into the fourth and fifth way that you're monetizing. We will be right back. Hey, my friend, as you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show. We're back with the Tom Fox. I want to talk a little bit about these last two ways that he monetizes. One is by branded shows where he hosts for other people. And the next is the five-part series that he's done for companies. Let's dive in, and then we'll wrap everything up. I'll share with you all these cool takeaways that we got to make sure that you're remembering each of these takeaways so you can make the most amount of money through your podcast. Tom, the branded shows, people are reaching out to you, it sounds like, and they're saying, hey, I'm an attorney or I'm a law firm and I'm in the compliance space. My company would like a podcast, but we don't want to figure all of the hard stuff out. Why don't you interview my attorney or me and make me look really, really good? You do all the editing and publishing. Is that kind of what is happening with these branded shows that you host?
That's basically it. But there are a couple of twists I want to point out to our audience. I started by pitching to law firms because I'm a lawyer and I can speak legalese about doing a podcast and some success with that. What I'm finding now, Adam, is that companies who have used other services from me, whether it was a paid appearance fee or it was a five-part series that I know we're going to talk about in a minute, they've now seen the value to them for podcasting, and they've decided to take the next step, which is to create their own podcast, branded podcast, and I, as an outsourced podcast producer, can provide to them. So it's been a little bit of a journey for me, but also for my clients as well, in their evolution and their thinking, because they've seen the power of podcasting through some of the other offerings I have. But absolutely, if you want to have a law firm, or the other thing is, because of my subject matter expertise, I can interview anyone in the compliance space, literally. It doesn't matter what their role is, chairman of the board down to the guy sweeping the floor. I've done it in compliance, so I can speak to speak.
Yeah. I think I heard something. So when you're hosting these podcasts for other people's companies, I think I heard you say that they may have been somebody who paid to be on your show. And then they, I guess, understand and realize the value of having a show. And how do they go about like hiring you? Did you offer it to them? Hey, I can help you start a show. Did they just ask, hey, can you help me with a show? Or how did they find out?
Well, there's a reason I'm called the voice of compliance, and that's because not only did I found the first network in compliance, it's the only podcast network. Everybody knows me, and I know everybody. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I've been very active in the entire compliance community. I've written 28 books. I blog every day in addition to the podcasting. So everybody knows who I am, and they know if they want to do a podcast, I'm the guy they have to talk to. Sometimes it starts, Tom, we just want to do one appearance with your appearance fee. Sometimes it's, we've heard about this five-part series. I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. So we want to do that. But it's an evolution of delivering the podcast, but it's also an evolution of their understanding the social media marketing assets they're going to receive and how they can utilize those literally to advertise the podcast, to advertise their products, to give a 60-second clip to a salesperson who can put in an email and say, here's what Tom Fox is saying about our software. Why don't you come check it out? Or can I follow up with a phone call? So it's just delivering. When I talked about location a little bit earlier, it's also utilizing those social media marketing assets going forward.
I really love that. Let's jump into the five-part series. So that was, if I'm not mistaken, it sounds like part four, the branded, when you're hosting these podcasts, is kind of a bigger step because there's more of a commitment for them to keep and maintain it. And then you're part of that podcast for a while and you charge them to do that. And then it sounds kind of like the five-part series is a little bit easier to chew on for that person. They don't have to figure out how to maintain a podcast for a long, long time. They could just do the five-part series with you and it's done and ready. Is that sound right so far?
Correct. And the five-part series goes out over literally 5 days. So it's Monday to Friday.
Days.
So it is a quick blast of information. So some companies want to, they have a new product they want to highlight. Some companies want to show thought leadership. Some companies want to do it before one of the major trade shows in compliance so that they can drive traffic to their booth. There are a variety of reasons to do it. The power of it is the following. Each episode is relatively short at 15 minutes. That's by design. So you can get across two, maybe three concepts. But when you put all five together, they tell a very large and coherent story, which is the overall theme of the podcast. I started this pre-pandemic, and what I found was the download numbers were extraordinarily weighted towards Monday and Tuesday, because what people were doing was downloading all five episodes and listening to them on a commute, listening to them at the gym, listening to them on a walk, whatever it was, but they were listening straight through. Pandemic changed that so that the numbers are now relatively consistent throughout the week, but that's just a podcast. So you get five podcasts. I write a blog for each podcast. You get five blogs. I create for each podcast four social media sharing assets, which are videograms, three at 60 seconds or less for Twitter and one at 2 minutes or less for LinkedIn. So you get 20 of those. And I re-edit the blog post into a white paper. So you get a long form white paper. So marketing content. So that's 31 pieces of marketing content any company can utilize going forward. And they're literally evergreen. So you can use them throughout the year. So many marketing CMOs or other marketing folks use the podcast story series is what I call it to create marketing assets that they can use throughout the year because I provide everything back to them.
That's pretty cool. Love it. What would be your best advice to a new podcaster, someone who's really just starting out?
Well, it would be, my experience tells me go niche to go big.
Okay. Love it.
The more niche you go, the bigger your audience will be. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but don't say, I'm going to start the Joe Smith podcast on entrepreneurship. Say, yeah. I'm going to start the Joe Smith Entrepreneur podcast on software dedicated to healthcare billing. That's a niche audience, and that's what that audience is going to listen to. And more importantly, people who want to connect with people in the healthcare billing space, they're going to buy sponsorships of your podcast because you're talking to the people they want to get their message to.
Really good. So a couple of takeaways for the listener. First and foremost, A, if you want to start a podcast network, you want to think about the space, the territory, the location of each thing. So for example, on the website, that sponsorship might be the banners at the top. On a podcast, it could be your mid-roll. If you're talking about your daily newsletter, you get more engagement at the bottom of that one. Tom talked about his non-Tom Fox pods or non-Tom, I will call it, and the Tom Fox podcast. Number two, host Red Ads. He has 500 touch points a month. That is with downloads through all of the different episodes. That's for his social. That's all those other places. 500 downloads, 500 touch points a month. And wondering how does he charge? He didn't use the metrics. Okay. So listen, give yourself the confidence and give yourself the confidence to allow yourself to just say, all right, hey, I'm just going to go as high as the market would bear, just like Tom's wife said to him. And just start lower and maybe move it up. How many episodes per week should you have? He says as many as you can comfortably agree to. He talked about the James Patterson thriller versus romance. Just make sure that you let your listener know, your audience know, your follower know what to expect, and then give it to them. It's better to grow later than to shrink later. It's worse to start at a some number and then let your listener down and make him think you're no longer serious. It's better to start a little bit smaller, one a week, and go to four a week if you want to. And now your audience says he was already serious and now he or she is more serious. Number three way to monetize was appearance fees, just like JLD's 3,500. Don't be afraid, Tom says. That fear can really hold you back. He used to get 10 to 15 pitches a day because in that space, he's the guy. And so now he charges about 250. Again, this came from Tom's wife. You should charge for this appearances. And it's helped him. So he doesn't have as many people to go through anymore. He doesn't have to vet so many. And now he actually gets paid to do some of that vetting. And he says, you got to get over your fear. So if you're afraid to ask for money, it's just a business transaction. And then we found out that he would also pay to get on other people's. And then number four and number five, hosting for other people. He charges people. So he becomes the host and they become a guest and he helps them shine and he does all the editing. And he also mentioned that he did a few more things with it. Both with number four and with number five, he's doing social media, audiograms, videograms, all that kind of stuff, putting it in the blog when he can, all that kind of stuff to really give that person more exposure when you're hosting for other people. And number five was a five-part series. It goes every day, short 15-minute episodes, two to three concepts per each one, 5 days in a row. And he's learned that over time, the riches are in the niches. He said, go niche to go big. I appreciate you, Tom. Thank you. We are going to jump off. I want to remind the listener right now that the next episode after this is a solo episode. It's much shorter. It's just you and me. And I want you to check it out. I will see you there. And remember, all of Tom's links and bio are in the show notes. Just scroll down. You can connect with him. See you on the next episode. If you're glad that you checked out the podcast today, if you got some value out of this episode, some actionable takeaways, I invite you to do one of three things. A, you could do a written review on Apple. Let us know what you think. Just an honest written review. B, you could share the podcast with a friend of yours who needs it. Or C, at the very least, implement what you've learned to take your business and your podcast to the next level. And I'll see you on the next episode.